Hello, I'm Howard and welcome to The Friday Show, the show that would not have wanted to interview Jürgen Klopp after last night's match. It just meant less, I guess. We have got another bumper show planned, looking back at the Bernabeu Classic, talking to a Hatter and previewing the weekend game and what on earth the starting 11 will be. Don't expect all the answers from us, let's put it that way. To do so, I'd like to be joined in alphabetical order by George and Lloyd. George, good afternoon, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you, Howard. Had a little hiccup with the my tech department today, but now that's all sorted. Feeling good, looking forward to the weekend and looking forward to the match. How are you getting on?
Not bad. It's the first day of wearing shorts and a t-shirt. I say first day, the only day before the temperature goes down 10 degrees again. But yeah, it feels like sun's getting nearer, which is nice. So, and it's Friday, the sun's out. So, yeah, I'm all right.
Big coat banning order at the Etihad from now on.
I know, but I miss the big coat. I love it. It's my security blanket.
Comfort. So, yeah. It's like those weighted blankets people have. It's the big coat acts like that at the footy, doesn't it, really?
It does, yeah, indeed. Lloyd, good afternoon. How are you?
Afternoon. Yeah, I'm good. Nice day in London today. It is nice, isn't it, when the clocks change and you get these longer evenings. I've definitely improved my mood as of late.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and Liverpool last night, of course.
Oh, don't worry, we'll get to them. We've put aside 25 minutes of our 1 hour show for that, so don't worry about that. Yeah, it does. It's weird how it affects your mood. Don't mind it being dark in the morning, because it's easy to get up when it's dark for me, but it's just nice, isn't it? Yeah. Remember those dark days in February, Lloyd, when you're putting the light on at 4 p.m? So,
it's just grim, isn't it?
It is grim. It really is. But hey, that's all in the past. Right, we've got a lot to get through, so let's crack on. Lloyd, I'm going to stay with you. Part one, we look back to Madrid. You're on the review, but now the dust has truly settled. I keep forgetting it was a Tuesday night match. It's been, yeah, time has flown by. It feels like it was only a day ago. Well, now the dust has settled, what are the key things you took from that match? Did you come away feeling pretty damn good?
Yeah, I did. I think the more time that's kind of gone, the better result I think it probably is. You know, we kind of take it for granted a little bit as of the last few years, given our record there, is really good, but it's so hard to go to the Bernabeu and you know, not come away having get beat. Madrid, I thought, having rewatched the game, I thought they were actually really quite tricky in that first half. And I thought we did well to come out of it and improve like we did in the second half. And you kind of saw the real City in the second half. And, you know, Rodri spoke about that, like we discussed on the review, saying he thinks a lot of that was down to freshness, and it takes, actually, when you're fatigued, it takes you a bit of time to almost get up to speed. So, yeah, very happy. And, you know, some of the results this week, definitely other results from English teams definitely illustrate just how difficult it is.
George? Same question for you. You've not had a chance to speak about the match yet, so how did you feel once a classic game of two halves in a way? And a reason not to start making conclusions at half time again in a City match.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, going into the match, obviously we'd played about three games to Madrid's one in the preparation, so that was a cause for concern going in, just what would be more leggy and not as fresh. And I think you saw bits of that in the first half. We looked a bit tired, and some of our passing, you know, simple short passing was a bit sloppy, which is, you know, usually the best part of our game. And Madrid really pounced on those opportunities because they were full of energy. But then as the match went on, and especially into the second half, we found a more natural rhythm, maybe due to playing more games recently, that Madrid just were lacking that kind of rhythm until they brought Modric on. And, you know, I'll take the draw at the Bernabeu in the first leg all day, every day. I'll agree to away draws in the first leg all day, because you've got to back yourself at home in the next leg, like we've, you know, we've been so terrific at home in the big games as of late. So, Yeah, I came away fairly optimistic. The game was exhausting in a great way, but I come away very optimistic.
Just to pick up on one thing George said there, actually, because it's something Bailey and I discussed after the review, and we were like, oh, we didn't mention it, is Modric did make a massive difference when he came on, and I think he did kind of help pull the game a bit back towards Madrid in that last kind of 15-20. And yeah, having rewatched it, because I was really nervous at the time and kind of hopeful we would hang on to the one goal lead, he definitely had an impact and helped kind of keep them the ball and spread it up the pitch. You know, just some of those diags he was playing.
He was terrific. He was terrific. And I think Ancelotti's learned that from last year when they played Kroos and Modric against us, you know, two players who were at the tail ends of their careers and don't quite have the legs. City's midfield ran rings around them. So playing just one of them and playing a few of the younger players here, Camavingas, Valverde's, it allows them to be more athletic from the jump, but then also bringing Modric on when the game's stretched and people are overall more tired kind of counteracts his age, so he looks very fresh. And yeah, he was dictating a lot of their play when he came on, but I thought that we coped with it fairly well, but he definitely gives them a different dimension in the final third.
And Lloyd, something we mentioned in the review, I think it's a key point anyway, was it understandable City took time to settle into this match? Because when you look at it, and let's not forget Real Madrid, we didn't beat them at the beginning of our last season, yeah, when we were at our peak and then went on to...
Exactly, yeah.
In what was the greatest, probably 45 minutes I've probably ever seen from City in that second leg, but the first leg was tough. So you don't just go there and boss them. They've lost one league game all season. I think they've only... And they did say on the commentary, they've only lost to Atletico Madrid this season. They've only conceded one, I think, in the previous five games. So, and I would say they're in a better, you know... Champions are like, they're in a better position than last season as well, this time when we played. So all in all, this was one hell of a tough match. But build up to the match, I think, was key to understanding this game and analysing it. Is it couldn't have been much worse for City.
I think that's all spot on. Well said. There's not,
right, on to the next question.
I've not got much else to add, yeah. I mean,
well, Madrid, the build-up, yeah.
Madrid are a better team than last year. They probably missed Militao. A little bit.
And but, of course the keeper, yeah.
Yeah, and Courtois, you know, yeah. Courtois, but I don't watch La Liga, but everyone that I kind of respect or follow on Twitter has said that Lunin, the standing goalie, has had an exceptional season and has been out of this world good. So I think what you said is absolutely bang on, Howard. That kind of context paints it to be, you know, an even better result than maybe I thought it was at kind of 10 p.m. on Tuesday.
But of course, the injuries and the late pull out of Kevin De Bruyne as well means Pep's got no time in a way. I mean, changing one player might not be the end of the world, but in your tactics, but it means he's doing things on the run. And of course, the number of times he's mentioned the schedule recently, Pep, it's clear, you know, couldn't have had a worse lead up. So frustrated as I was in that first half, and I was a lot of the time, because I felt City were, George, were caught between a rock and a hard place, in that they didn't want to attack too much because of that transition, and because of that they got done on the transition anyway, because they got dispossessed too easily, I felt.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that if your game is to not get hit on the transitions, that you'll be overthinking all of the simple things that you're usually so good at in your build-up. Mm. You'll be worrying about misplacing passes, and more often than not, if you worry about doing something, you end up doing it. And I think we kind of were our own worst enemy in that first half. Most of Madrid's opportunities came as a result of sloppier play from us that they then would take advantage of, and they drove up the pitch, you know, with the quality that they have in Vinicius and Rodrigo, who... both of which, if when they've got the ball at the feet, running into space in the opposition half, they're lethal players. So it's a tricky one for City. I would have liked to maybe have seen us be a bit more decisive, not necessarily like gung-ho and adventurous in the final third, but just more decisive when we had the ball in that first half going forward. I felt like a lot of our players didn't know what to do with the final pass when they're on the edge of the box. And more often than not, I think Lloyd mentioned it in the review, Kovacic ended up with the ball in space with and had the opportunity to maybe play the final pass or the through balls. And he always kind of looked like he was overthinking it massively and then ended up just either going sideways or backwards. So I think we were just lacking a decisiveness. And, you know, that's not helped when you don't have, you know, De Bruyne on the pitch, who is one of the most decisive footballers that we've seen in the last few years. So, yeah, that's kind of where I stand on that.
So, Lloyd, what changed in that second half? Was it Pep tactical tweaks that we... I guess if you're just sat in a pub watching a game, you're not going to see the little things he does. It's moving stones forward, it's dropping someone wide, it's little things like that. It felt like a different game to me in the second half after a couple of early chances for Madrid.
Yeah, I think it's a few things. So one of the things that we did pick out on the review was I thought it was pretty clear, and that was even from me in the pub, that Stones was pushed up about 10-15 yards higher in that second half. Kovacic also kind of tucked in a little bit more, so they were closer together and allowed us to play those triangles a little better. But I also think you've got to take what Rodri said on face value, which is that, you know, they struggled themselves, the players, to get into the rhythm of the game a bit. Madrid blitzed them, and it actually took City time to kind of get the feel and the temperature of the game, because, you know, we have to be honest, in the first half there were a lot of kind of uncharacteristic sloppy passes, weren't there, from some of our best ball players. Now, we didn't really see that in the second half, and I think we also managed to sustain attacks better and kind of pin Madrid back without the threat of the counter. So I'd say those were the probably two main things. And plus, as well, I also thought, because I was a bit critical of Haaland's kind of hold up play, particularly in the first half. I thought second half, actually, again, having watched it back, he occupies both Tchouaméni and Rudiger really well, in a way almost to kind of be a shadow. Because if you look at both goals, he actually plays quite a crucial role to pull away and create space for Phil and for Guardiola. So I thought he got to grips a little bit better with his role, which I think he was clearly asked by Pep to kind of do a bit of a role for the team.
George, we discussed quite a while Haaland on the review, proving quite divisive, or at least with the Scouse Mafia anyway. Jamie Carragher, the latest to ignore Headless Chicken that plays for his team, but happy to write an article on Erling Haaland. Where do you stand on Haaland this season, or just recently? Could he do more in physical duels? Because that physical duels is what a lot of people have picked up on as being a weakness of his in recent games or over this season, when he's come up against someone like Rudiger or someone who's willing to engage with him like that.
Yeah, I think Haaland has had a trickier season this year than last. But also, I think City have had a trickier season this year than they did in the previous one. And I think, you know, a lot more teams now have, shall we say, a game plan to play against Haaland. He had attention last year, but he has even more so this year. And I think a lot of the noise we're hearing at the moment is there's always got to be a narrative, you know, when City are on this great unbeaten run, there's got to be something that people want to poke and pod at. And, you know, I think a lot of it is nonsense, you know, the shouts of League Two player and the Carragher argument that he's a great goal scorer, but he's not a great footballer. It's like, well, the point of football is to score goals to win matches. So I can't quite work that one out myself. And of course, I think, you know, he's still a young player. He's definitely got parts of his game that he needs to improve on, like anybody does in whatever career you're doing at that stage in your life. There's always stuff you can get better at and improve at. And I think he will. And I think I think most of his issues I found this year, I think it's kind of more the mental side of things. I don't question his attributes or his skill level. I think it's A, how do you follow up on such a monumental season in your debut in the Premier League and, you know, winning the treble, scoring, breaking all the goal scoring records? You know, you've got to start the season with that in your mind, and how do you try and eclipse that, which is such a mammoth task? And then also, it's when something, he's had the injuries, so that's another thing. He didn't really have as many injuries last year, and that's, he's been a bit disjointed, slightly more in and out of the side as a result of that. So I just want to see you from Haaland, rather than, you know, it's easier said than done, but rather than the frustration and the doubt which I see creep into his face when he's on the pitch, I just want to see him be essentially more of a shithouse on the pitch. Like last season when the stuff, when he was giving the back and forth with Godfrey, I thought, I loved all that, you know, I like seeing him a bit feistier, and I think he's getting a bit frustrated and wound up when these players are targeting him, but I think he's got the physicality to go back at them and just be a proper nuisance. And hey, if he gets the odd booking more here and there, so be it. But I just think he just needs to bring a slight bit more aggression into his game and just, you know, just give it back a little bit more, because I have no doubts on his ability and also what he can do for this team.
Lloyd. Philip Walter Foden, my Richard Keys voice again, despite everything he's already achieved at such an age, scoring a goal like that in the Bernabeu to change the game as well is a defining moment for him.
It is, but it's not within the City sphere. I think it's more for outside of that. So I think City fans this season are well aware of just how good Phil has been, and you know, he's probably been our player of the season along with Rodri, I would say. And I think that to me was quite noticeable actually after the game. I had a lot of my mates who are, you know, watch a lot of football, but you know, they won't watch City every week. So that goal that kind of made them go, maybe he can play in the middle for England. It's like, sorry, has he got to put one in top bins at Bernabeu, and you've just not watched any of the Premier League this season? But that's sometimes how narrative works in football, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think Phil struggled a bit in the first half. He kind of couldn't get into the game, and I think that was more because we didn't really get him the ball in dangerous areas. But as I said on the review, I think people have got very short memories, because I saw some of the criticism online, particularly at halftime, way over the top, and you know, just forgetting that Kev has had countless games like that where he's been, you know, somewhere between anonymous and poor, and then he's just put one in the top bins and everyone just completely forgets about the performance and you're defined by the goal. So yeah, I mean, amazing for Phil. He's really building ahead of steam now. I think the only thing that can probably hold him back this summer when it comes to England is probably injury and fitness, because he's played an exceptional amount of minutes now this season. I think he's over 3,500 for City in all comps, which is a hell of a lot.
I think he's had involved in more games than any other Premier League player, I think, in all competitions. So, because it's probably virtually all of them, let's be honest. And the only Premier League, 6 goals from outside the box this season, as mentioned on the review, the only player to have done that as well. I mean, that's ridiculous, isn't it, Lloyd? Six goals from outside the box. But does that link into Haaland at all as well? I mean, if he is occupying a defender without being actually involved, we're scoring a lot more long-range shots. I mean, in the old days, we tried to, you know, even at our peak, we've tried to walk the ball in too many times to be the goal. And now, is it because Haaland's actually creating some space here?
I'd say it's a factor, but I think the real reason is that we've got 3 players in Rodri, De Bruyne and Foden who are all incredibly good ball strikers from long range. You know, those guys hit some of the cleanest goals you're likely to see in world football. You know, if you look, Rodri scored somewhere, he's literally broken the net. Obviously, Kev's got, you know, a highlights list as long as my arm, and Phil has scored loads of bangers that have hit the top corner this season. You know, the United goal and the Madrid goal are almost carbon copies of each other. So I'd say it's mostly down to that, but I think you could be onto something a bit there. You know, Haaland definitely makes defences shit themselves in that you do see, particularly when we come up against back threes, you see almost two of the centre-backs occupying him at once, which creates space elsewhere, doesn't it?
Mm. George Lloyd's cruelly overlooked our fourth great ball striker. How obscene that we have defenders who can score goals like Gvardiol.
Yeah, that was an absolute belter, wasn't it? It was one of those goals you're celebrating with such a massive smile on your face, almost like laughing just because of how surprised you are at the quality of the strike. I mean, when he takes that first touch, for a split second, I thought, oh God, we're going to get hit on the break. Now they're going to pick this up and drive up the pitch because we'd committed a fair few people forward. But then his recovery on his wrong foot bends it perfectly. It's exceptional, and I think it's a moment Gvardiol will need for his confidence and just feeling like he belongs in the team and at this level, because I think he's had a good season so far. It's been a learning curve, obviously been playing a new position and playing very advanced for a lot of the season, so I think getting that goal will give him a lot more confidence in the final third. And yeah, if we can see a few more of those for the rest of the season, we'll all be very, very happy indeed.
Lloyd, at that point, we disappointed to let the lead slip, or happy overall in how City handled the game as a whole and where it leaves the tie? Because it always felt, even at 3-2, which was on 71 minutes, it felt like there was another twist to come in this match.
Agreed. It would have been great for us to hold on and take a one-goal lead to the Etihad, but as I said on the review, that, you know, that was just an exceptional goal from Valverde. That's one of the best goals I've seen this season. It's so hard to strike a ball like that when you're coming onto it. And the connection was sweet as, I mean, basically in the bottom corner before Ortega could blink. So you have to be happy with 3-3. You have to be happy with a draw. I think it leaves us in a really good position. And sometimes, I know this is going to sound a bit weird, but sometimes if you take a lead back, I think it can slightly alter your mentality for how you then play at home. You know, knowing basically it's 0-0, we've got to go and win the game. Like that's simple. That's, you know, it's literally maths. So
literally.
Yeah, it's literally maths. So I think there's not much more we can ask for. And I was content at full time with the draw.
George, I seen you were as well. I think 23 goals in 5 matches between these two sides. Memory serves me correctly. This could have been a final, obviously. But was this game proof? I mean, we'll come to what was an entertaining week as a whole. This game proof that we are talking about the two heavyweights, biggest heavyweights in European football right now?
I think so. And as you've said, with the amount of goals in the fixture now, I think the fact that we've played them in all these consecutive years now has really kind of built up the narratives. You know, there's people are so many mutual fans, you know, people who don't support City or Real, they're tuning into this match just because it's City versus Real, whereas, you know, maybe if it was City versus Atletico, for example, in the quarterfinal, maybe some people, if they'd had a better offer for the evening, might go out, do something else, go on a walk, go to the cinema, I don't know, do something else. Whereas I think if you know City versus Real Madrid's on telly in a Champions League match knockout round, at the moment you're gonna be watching it in whatever way that you can. And I think the games have just meant that, you know, it's they just live up to everything, don't they? Goals, drama. And yeah, it is a shame maybe that we've met early, and, you know, would there have been potential if we'd been successful if they'd been on the other side of the draw to meet in a final, how would that be? Would be quite the spectacle. But at the same time, I'm quite glad to have two legs against
them, than one. Yeah.
Rather than one against Real, because, you know, they're the kings of this competition with the amount of times they've won it, and in finals they always find a way, even against, you know, the best Atletico side we've seen in the early 2010s at Simeone, the great Juve sides. They've beaten Conte's Juve sides in finals, and they just destroy people, Liverpool side. So I'm quite happy that we've got two legs against them. But it's, yeah, it's turning into a real classic Champions League tie, which is still quite a, still puts a smile on my face when I say that with City involved.
Like doing the notes for this, I just realised there's been three Champions League second legs, semi-final second leg games on my birthday. The Pellegrini 1-0 defeat, which I'm happy to forget ever happened, considering the lack of the 2-1 win over PSG in an empty stadium when it hit, when it was covered in hail the whole pitch, and that 3-1 defeat when they crumbled in injury time, which was the last time City lost a European game. 23 months ago was the last time City lost a European game, I think. I think I'm right in that.
Sounds right,
and,
yeah.
And any game at home, well, Brentford, of course, before the World Cup. I mean, just at least step back and think about it. You're all used to success now, all used to the players and everything, but just how big, and obviously Madrid can still, Madrid are Madrid, they could still pull us out of the bag, do a job on us and win. It could go to penalties, dreading that, I thought. This tie is obviously far from over. We're level at the halfway stage, but just how big is having that home advantage for that second leg?
It's huge, and to be honest, it's probably the defining thing that I took from the draw. It was almost like I wasn't that arsed who we drew. The fact that we had the second leg for both the quarter and the semi at the Etihad, given our record, which you've just laid out for everyone.
Just to put in, we didn't win away, did we, in the knockout stage last season? Because Pep was so
all around, wasn't it?
He was so confident that our home form would be enough, and he was very right in that respect. 7-0, 4-0, 3-0.
There you go. So, you know, the team defensively was better last season, but
yeah,
that record is, you know, it's the kind of thing that'll be looked back on in future years and will reminisce on and be like, we didn't kind of appreciate that for what it was at the time. I think the other thing as well, which is something that we touched on in the review, and I think it's really important when you hear players of other teams talk about being shook of the Etihad and it being one of the hardest grounds they've gone to. I mean, they're literally the guys on the pitch kicking the ball around. You know, us fans can talk about how difficult it is for City to go to Anfield or how we always struggle at this ground, that ground. You know, if the players are saying that, Valverde did the interview last year about how it's the hardest ground he's played at. I mean, I think that tells you everything you need to know. They are not going to feel confident coming to the Etihad on Wednesday. To be honest, they're going to know they're going to need to play probably out of their skin, and City are going to have a bad day for them not to get knocked out.
And was it him that said it felt like a defeat, their draw this week, which tells you that they really felt they needed to take a lead to the second leg.
Yeah, they needed the lead, I think. And it's not just from a one goal lead perspective. I think it's mentally, you know, after what happened last year, after what City have done. To be honest, I would say across the last 3 to 4 years in the Champions League, I think we've been incredibly dominant across the competition as a whole. So there you go. Another interview from a player basically giving you an insight into their psyche for the game.
Yeah. Firmino69 disagrees though on Twitter, so hey, who knows best?
Well,
him or Valverde?
Firmino69 probably wouldn't say that when before you were talking about European royalty, well, I guess you should probably throw Atalanta in there to that at the moment.
Well, they've won at Anfield before, so can't say you couldn't see it coming. It was such a packed review, George. We forgot to mention the referee. Now, normally, if I want to mention the referee, it's for a nice, good rant. But we must mention how good I thought he was, which feels like damning with faint praise, but I think he absolutely nailed this one.
Yeah, he had a great night. I was slightly nervous early on. It was great that Tchouaméni got booked so early.
Yeah.
I thought, oh God, if he's giving yellows out after a minute and a half, then there's somebody seeing red in this game and it could easily be a City player.
Yeah.
So I was very nervous after that. But then as the game went on, and especially in that first hour of the match, Real Madrid were pulling out every trick in the Mourinho book, kind of shithousery and simulation and everything. They were trying everything to get free kicks and City players booked. And, you know, the likes of Bellingham, I don't know how he actually... My only criticism of the ref is how Bellingham and Camavinga didn't get yellow cards in the match, because...
Three players could have been suspended, yeah.
Yeah, because they would have been suspended for the second leg. And Bellingham's obviously unhappy with the tackle that Diaz put in on him, which actually was a great tackle. And then he runs after him and just basically shoves him in one of the next phases of play, which is a yellow all day if the ref's paying attention to it. And then Camavinga was obviously doing a lot of fouls. So those are probably the only things that I would criticise the ref on from, you know, with my City hat on. But if you take a bit more of an outside perspective, I thought he let the game flow really well, didn't fall for any of the tricks that the players were pulling on him. And it meant for a very entertaining match.
Never wanted him anyway. Classic word, never wanted him anyway comment. Bellingham, quite the snide.
Yeah.
So and so, is he not?
He didn't cover himself in glory in that match because the main takeaway, he's not just City fans saying this, the main takeaway from a lot of people wasn't on his play and his impact, you know, with the ball at his feet. It was more his moaning, complaining, diving throughout the entire match. And, you know, I guess he's probably now, you know, he's been playing in this Real Madrid side all season. He's probably used to maybe the power Real Madrid supposedly have over officials in La Liga. And, you know, there's a big rhetoric on that from other fan bases in Spain, just as kind of, you know, people would probably say in this country how the refs don't want to give stuff against Liverpool or United and stuff for the fear of the backlash. So when he's obviously got a ref who's from France and has no dog in the fight against an English and a Spanish club, he was getting frustrated at the lack of things going his way. But, you know, I think a lot of England fans would have probably liked to have seen more from Bellingham in how he impacted the game as a footballer rather than a complainer.
Almost as if he was trying to get himself suspended, eh?
I like that conspiracy theory.
Lloyd, you're going to say?
Just really refreshing, particularly after how Taylor reffed the Arsenal match where he refused to give a yellow card. It was just, I just thought it was really refreshing for what was a clear yellow from Tchouaméni after about 20 seconds. The ref just had the courage of his convictions to go, you know, I'm not asked how early in the game it is and about setting a precedent. That's a yellow card. Here's a yellow. I just thought that was great. And yes, for me, particularly Camavinga should have been booked, I thought. Not just for accumulation, but for the number of... not just for accumulation, but for some of the level of aggression in the fouls. But taking a step back, I mean, I thought it was an amazing, genuinely amazing refereeing performance, which really fed into how the game was played. And if we can see more kind of top-level games ref like that, where, you know, bad tackles do get their punishment, but generally the game's allowed to flow, football is a much better game for it.
I thought you were referring to Taylor in Europe when you started talking about him. I put the PSG match on and someone went through someone else, like through the back of them, and he just played on. I was like, ah, yes. That'll be Taylor. It's like, I mean, it was impossible to miss what was probably a yellow card offence, and he actually played on.
But the weirdest thing is he then reffed the Liverpool-United game, and the first big tackle in that game at the weekend, he booked someone. Mm. So it's just like, so frustrating.
Anyway, Lloyd, staying with you, guess this week's matches put to bed the idea that Champions League's jaded? No away goals play any part in that, even if I am suddenly missing them for the first time ever.
It's just annoying that they're messing with the format next season. I think, you know, this is a perfect demonstration of I think of a really good format where at this point in the season, and actually in this particular campaign, you've got 8 great teams kind of slugging it out. And yes, that's maybe not fantastic, I appreciate, for some of the slightly less less economically gifted countries, or where the quality of the league is a bit less. But the quality of the football can't be argued with, and these 4 games are some of the best there's probably ever been in the knockouts.
But did the format change that, though? Doesn't change the knockout, does it?
No, but it's coming off the back of a different format in the earlier stage. You've got the 10 games, haven't you, where it's kind of more of like a league round robin, and then
they wanted it to be 10. It's down to 8, which obviously is terrible for the schedule, but the group stages have been pretty drab, have they not? I don't know, when you're as good as City, they are.
But isn't it also that then I think the way that the knockouts then go from that 8 kind of stage group, it's all a bit weird. I think
there is seeding involved.
Yeah, it's seeded, and you know, if you lose one game, say if you lose your 8th game, you can jump from like the first seeding down to the third. I'm not a fan of that. I think the current format works really well. Yeah, okay, the group stages might not be amazing, but I don't really see how this new like 8 game league solves it, particularly if you don't have the opportunity to go and play a team home and away, which you won't in that format. So frustrating for me.
Anyway, let's get to the key event of the week before we end part one. George, Lloyd, both get to speak on this. We normally have a Let's Laugh at You United section on our Friday show, but as it's European Football Week, obviously there's nothing to laugh at. Liverpool have stepped in, very gentlemanly of them, to fill in this section this week. George, are you stunned at their result last night? Or have they thrown it?
Well, all the talk today is that it was all kind of part of this master plan. Now,
even when they're losing, they're winning, you see.
Yeah, exactly. It's full focus on the league now, and this was just a smokescreen to catch everybody else off guard, really, this whole Europa League journey of theirs. It's not like they've been speaking about how many Liverpool fans are going to be in Dublin for the last year or so, and complaining about how they wouldn't get enough fans in Aviva Stadium and wanting to move it to Croke Park. They definitely didn't expect to get there at all. So it's just, I just couldn't believe it, really. I saw the team they put out, and I thought, obviously they've rested players, but you know, they still had a lot of expensive talent on that pitch and a lot of players who've played a lot of football this year who've been good. So you thought Atalanta have, obviously they're a tricky side, but player for player you expect Liverpool to go through, and just 1-0, then the 2, then the third was just stunned. I was stunned, but then just jubilant afterwards. But apparently, as well, I've heard it's all because of the flags, isn't it? That's the main reason they lost. Lack of flags in the cup.
Yep. Which is exactly that, yeah. Lloyd, hilarious, of course, but would you rather progressed? I mean, they're still, Carragher's already doing the Pravda thing of, you know, it gives them a chance to rest players. I don't think they will, and I wouldn't say it's completely done this tie either, much as they're up against it. But that aside, whatever now happens, would you rather Liverpool had progressed as a diversion for them, as something to keep them occupied in the same way, well, for now at least, City and Arsenal have got these games to get through in what is already a difficult schedule?
It's honestly so hard to say. I've been discussing it with a couple of colleagues in the office this morning, and you know, I'm stuck between A, which is they go out, but the damage, a result, and particularly, I didn't watch the game last night, but from the sounds of it, performance can do to your season at this point, to lose momentum like that. You can kind of spiral, and the way that the title race is, you know, a couple of games of drop points in the league could be game over for Liverpool. So
do you think he does hint at wider problems? Yeah, of breaking, basically.
You got to speak to Liverpool fans, right? You know, this is something Asan said earlier in the week. Well, I know. Yeah, it's inevitable, unfortunately. When you speak to Scousers, right, over the last few weeks, a lot of them have been saying, actually, you know, they weren't that confident going into the City game. They've kind of really got over the line against Sheffield United, against Brighton. They've obviously scored loads of late goals this season, and they've generally been saying they've not been playing that well. They've just been getting through. Now, you take the United game at the weekend. Obviously, United beat them in the FA Cup. And you see what happened last night when, and I haven't watched it because I was busy working last night, but by all accounts, you know, I've watched kind of BT Sports punditry after the game. They said they were terrible. So,
yeah. And yes, put on the big guns second half and were still terrible. So
exactly. So I do think there's an element that kind of, if you continue to play badly or not play well enough to kind of really dominate games, then obviously, at some point, that's going to bite you on the arse. Now, the difficulty is knowing from our side, if they go out versus, or would we rather they stay in and they have the accumulation of games, the potential of injuries, you know, just a bit of fatigue that City and Arsenal will face if they go through. It's so hard to say. I think there's genuinely pros and cons to kind of both approaches. But right now, having lost 3-0, I expect that they will still go to Italy and try and win the game. So that's a positive.
I think so too. Yeah, that's
a positive. I think they almost have to, because it is Klopp's last season, because, quote, they are Liverpool, it means more, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they have turned around worse deficits under Klopp in the past. So I think it's a good position for us to be in, and it's a little bit of a shame they don't have a harder game at the weekend than
Palace at home,
which, you know, will probably be dealt with by them. The only bright spot from City side is Elise should be fit to start, speaking to my Palace lads, which, come on, Michael, we could do a madness this weekend.
I think they'll need a bit more than him, to be honest, so. We'll see. Right, that's the end of part one. We've covered quite a lot, and it's time to look forward. But first, early today, I spoke to Luton fan Phil about all things Hatters, and this is what he had to say. I absolutely really enjoyed this. I'm delighted to be joined by Phil from We Are Luton. Good morning, Phil. How are you? Just checking
morning.
The time.
Morning, Howard. Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, how are you doing anyway?
Yeah, not too bad. Like I say, apprehensive about the weekend, I think is probably the word I would use. But I'm having a belt in time in the Premier League. So like I say, this is the last sort of away day against one of the big six. So it'll be interesting for the weekend.
Yeah, we'll get to your fixture list in a bit. I always do the opposition fan for Friday show, and the number of times, obviously, not every club's owned by a billionaire from wherever, and the number of times go, oh, dreading the weekend, and then the game turns out nothing like that, but we will see. But one quick note, there will be no mention of 1983.
Are you sure?
On this podcast. David Pleat running across the pitch still haunts me, especially as he ran to Brian Horton as well. So, well, let's start with the positives. Of course, well, I mean, there's been plenty of positives, but a very recent one last weekend, that win, huge. That if you hadn't won that, would you have felt that the bout was over or not?
I think within the stadium, you could feel it was. Even the most ardent fans were sort of thinking this might be us done, our race might be run, you know. So I think without sort of trying to sort of always lean on the fact that we've been so heavily hit by injuries, it was one of those situations where you were looking at our bench and kind of thinking, right, we've got two or three options, but that's about it really. And I keep harping on a personal front about the fact that Premier League teams are able to rely on 16 players to win a 90-minute match or a 100-minute match, you know. And at the moment, yeah, we've been in a position where we've been utilising 12, 13, 14 players at best. And when you go 1-0 down, having seen that the players are trying absolutely everything, it was pretty heartbreaking. And you could sort of feel for the first time this season that Kenilworth Road went really, really quiet, and you could just hear that people were deflated. But the players, one thing I have to say is that the players, there's three main players in particular, that being Ted and Mengi, Rhys Burke and Ross Barkley. I've miscounted as well. There's Carlton Morris as well, to be fair to him. They all rallied around each other and really got behind each other. And to see that was wonderful, because they've had a really tough run of fixtures. They've had no luck in recent times. To know that they're still absolutely busting a gut to do the business for the club was wonderful. And when Jordan Clark hit that equaliser, the whole place, the whole sort of atmosphere around the place just changed in an instant. It was elation. I have to say, it was one of those situations where it was just pure elation. The fact that we got that winner in the last minute as well from Carlton Morris's deft touch in the box was just wonderful.
You're going to revitalise your season, do it.
Yeah, I really do think it was that. Yeah, yeah, it was good. It was good.
And I say start with the positives, because the obvious negative, and again, a running theme when I talk to fans of other teams this season, injuries are ridiculous. I mean, you know, it's not just Luton, but fair to say you probably had one of the worst ones. Is it just bad luck or more?
I think that there's such a variety of injuries as well. That's the thing that if it was like just soft tissue injuries, you would sort of naturally think, oh, I wonder if it's the training, I wonder if it's the amount of load that's going through the legs, and whether or not we've utilized sort of squad players well enough. But the reality of it is that we've just had such a huge variety of different injuries, and they seem to have all cropped up since sort of January time. We've had longer term ones. We lost Premier League experience in Marvellous Nakamba a lot earlier on in the season. Lokonga's come in and he's never really been able to properly get going. We've seen excellence from Sambi, but also it always felt like whenever he was just hitting a peak, he'd have a little niggle and he was then out, and then he's come back and he was doing excellently, and then he's had this injury that's kept him out since the Liverpool game. So and even losing players on international duty, we lost Dog Bene, who is just a massive outlet for us in terms of pace. So it does just feel like we've been massively unlucky. And I know that in the media, some people have sort of given us some abuse for not signing anyone in January. But the reality of it was, back in January, we'd obviously lost Tom Lockyer to his health issues. And we signed Hashioka as a bit of defensive cover. But the reality of it is we've been hit so heavily with our entire squad. You've got a squad of 25. Nobody can legislate for losing 12, 13, 14 players at a time. So you could sign as many as you like, but you can't register as many as you like. So it just feels like we've been massively sort of stung by real bad luck, to be honest with you. So we've just had to get on with it.
You can't really make a lot of permanent signings, could you? But if you're covering for injuries, so you're kind of caught in a position. Yeah,
that's exactly it. Yeah.
I was going to ask, is there certain positions in the team that have been hit harder, or is it just literally across the board, defenders, midfields, strikers, wide players?
I think, defensively, it's been really difficult to get. We typically play sort of a 3-5-2 type formation, and the three centre-back positions, we haven't played three centre-backs in a long, long time. I can't recall the last time we played three fit centre-backs. Even having two, you can see the difference. So at the weekend, we obviously had Ted and Mengi and Rhys Burke, who are natural centre-backs, and having two out of the three of those fill those positions was fantastic. But in recent weeks, we've had four fullbacks playing across that back five just to sort of fill in holes. So obviously this weekend as well, we won't have the option of Issa Kabore, because he'll be ineligible. So that's another option that's taken away. So defensively, it's been hot. It's been really hard. Losing Adebayo was massive in terms of sort of out and out goal threat and being a nuisance and having legs. And it's meant that Carlton Morris has had to take on a huge amount more load moving forwards, and also without having Jacob Brown as well. So he can play off the wing, but he can also play directly up front as a striker. So recently it's been a case of Carlton Morris doing the heavy loads, and then Cawley Woodrow coming on for anywhere between sort of 10-20 minutes to try and give us something moving forward. But defensively and attack wise, it's been really, really tough.
It's been an emotional season, though, good and bad reasons. You mentioned Lockyer, and overall, have you enjoyed this ride?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, we couldn't have asked for anything more. I think that a lot of people wrote us off before any ball had been kicked, and it's been one of those
understandably.
Ones. Yeah. I mean, I mean, let's face it. Resource wise, like we're absolute minnows. But those that know Luton and those that have followed us over the last sort of 10-15 years know that there's heart in this club like nothing I've ever known. I mean, I'm obviously biased, of course, but it's the heart that runs through this club, and the ethos within the club is exceptional. And like I say, we started off the season thinking we'll back ourselves because we know Luton Town. The fans know Luton Town. They know that we can pull a surprise out of the bag. But in the back of our minds, we know it's not going to make or break this club. Like, we were looking at it, some of us, as essentially a bit of a payday that will give us access to a free football stadium. You know, like the payout that you get from being a Premier League side, even for one season, is so significant for a club like Luton.
How much of that heart, and desires come from, and the annoyingly handsome Rob Edwards? I mean, he's been brilliant for you, hasn't he?
He has been. It doesn't hurt that he came from our neighbours down the road that we don't particularly get along with, and he's not only did he get sacked from them like wrongly, in my opinion, but we've benefited and how, you know. I don't think anyone would have expected that of Luton when he was appointed. So that doesn't hurt. And he's an absolute wonderful manager. I think that I was reading an article that was released yesterday from an interview that Ross Barkley had, and he said that one conversation with Rob Edwards and he was in, you know. And I think if you look at any of the footage around Luton Town and how he's adored. He literally is adored, Rob Edwards. He's adored by our female fans that love him because of what he does for the club, but as well as how he looks. And he's equally adored by the male supporters as well, just because we love him in all sorts of ways. So the guy is an absolute dreamboat of a manager. And again, it's a weird thing to say this, but I'm so proud of him as well because of how he's how he's been such an excellent sort of example of what Luton Town is about. So I love him. His whole etiquette has been brilliant.
Yeah, off the pitch been a credit too, hasn't he? So
he really has. Yeah, and like I say, overcoming the situation with Tom Lockyer and the way that he's dealt with that with such humility and such raw emotion. He's open and honest about how he's felt, and like I say, I'm absolutely unbelievably proud of him, as are most of the fan base, I think.
And how is he doing, Lockyer? So
from what I understand. Yeah,
sorry. Play again, AC, but that's not the most important thing in life, is it?
No, that's not. Sorry, I'll keep cutting across your head. I apologise. I think Lox is doing well. He's enjoying some time doing some media work. I know that he's been working for TNT Sports quite regularly when we've been on there. He walks past the away fans when he was at the Arsenal game recently, and he walked past and got an amazing reception. And he recently had his first child, and I think that's probably going to pay a large part in how he looks with regards to his career moving forward. So like I say, I wish him the best and hope that his family are all happy and safe.
Before we get to the off-field stuff elsewhere, because we must, it kind of involves Luton, the star players for you this season. I mean, one's obvious is Barkley, of course. Yeah. I mean, he's always had that, but he's always, I say, potential. He's reached his potential, but then Luton's been a perfect place for him in a way to rekindle a career that had gone off track. I mean, just how good has he been for you?
He's the best player that's ever put on a Luton shirt. Really? And
ever?
People of a certain generation will say Ricky Hill. But even those that have been fortunate enough to see Ricky Hill and Ross Barkley, like both of them are representing Luton will be, they'll be torn because Ricky Hill's a cult legend. He played multiple hundreds of times for us. But in terms of outright skill and outright class on the pitch, Ross Barkley is unbelievable. I think that having the opportunity to see him play week in, week out, and the way that he beats players and how strong he is and how calm he is and the way that he has an influence on the younger players as well has been just an absolute wonderful experience this year. I can't speak highly enough of him. I think that the way that he brings on the other players as well, you'll see him, he's not a rant and raver. He just sort of gives off sort of body language as if to say sort of calm down, you're all right, like take your time. And you can see that with Rob Edwards and Ross Barkley putting that ethos across from sort of, I'd say about game week 7, 8, 9, the way that we started playing was completely different, and people started to buy into the fact that if you give Ross the ball, he's not going to lose it very often. He might lose it on the odd occasion, but very rare is the day that that Ross Barkley loses the ball. Even when he's under pressure, he's so strong and so clever. He's for me, he's a shoo-in for player of the season. But there's a couple of other shout outs as well. I think that Thomas Kaminski's been an absolute revelation in goal. We picked him up on a steal, really, from Blackburn Rovers, and he's been absolutely magnificent. And also Tedden Mengi at the centre of the defence there. He's an absolute warrior. Hopefully he'll be fit enough to play on Saturday. He was given the run around by Haaland at Kenilworth Road, but I think that was also tactically something that we were a bit naive with for going man for man against Man City. Yeah. It was the most bizarre match I've ever witnessed in person.
Yeah.
It was just mad. It was one player following another, and Haaland being fed by De Bruyne that night was a difficult one for Mengi. But other than that, he's been absolutely stellar. So those three are the ones that stand out for me.
And how's Kabale been? Obviously, a player City fans will have an interest in.
Yeah, Kabore's one of those ones where he's either hot or he's cold. And he's well loved. Like he enjoys stoking up the fans, and like he enjoys having his name sung, and he's a proper winner. And sometimes sometimes he'll have an absolute worldy game, and you'll think, yeah, this guy is absolutely fantastic. Like I'm so pleased to have him in the team. And then another, he'll get caught out every so often. So there's been a few goals where sort of he's been caught on the shoulder, and that the attacker's come in behind him, or he's sort of been caught short a little bit and ended up having to either score an own goal, or he's managed to sort of be ever so slightly out of position. You kind of think, oh, come on, Issa, you're better than that. But ultimately, when he's in the side, I think that we're a little bit stronger down that side for him being there. So he'll be a miss for us for sure. He'll be a miss for us for sure.
Especially it's another one more number not available is obviously an issue. So yeah. No avoiding it. The relegation battle is perhaps impossible to call when other teams are getting charged over PSR. How have you viewed the whole saga? I say he's an outsider, but you're not, because your future is wrapped up in this. Do you feel, obviously Everton fans and Forest fans have been defensive and feel they've been hard done by, as someone, you know, whose club, as far as I know, obviously have not broken PSR rules and work within the restrictions. Do you feel sympathy for them, or do you feel that these clubs have got what they deserved? And how hard as a rival fan is it for you to not know how many points you might actually need to stay up?
Yeah, it's been hard. I think in January, when we were on a good run, I spoke about wanting to get ourselves out of the situation relegation wise without having to rely on points, deductions elsewhere. That hasn't obviously transpired. I think that there's been a number of different factors that have meant that we've not been able to sort of progress the form that we showed in sort of January, early February. So therefore I am invested, obviously, as you say, Howard, but yeah. I think it will sound bitter, but the reality of the situation is that I support a club that the FA sanctioned so heavily that we were nearly put into non-existence. So
for those that don't know, is it the biggest point deduction in history? It's 30 points, was it?
Yeah, my understanding is that it is. And that was in one season, at the start of the season. Right. We started on minus 30. And that was after we'd already had other points deductions in previous years. So again, I'm not saying that necessarily that it was wrong that we'd broken rules. But when you break rules, you expect the sanction to fit the crime. And I think that the sanctions that are being dished out in this most recent round of deductions are pretty pathetic. I think that they're not enough to be a deterrent. I think that clubs will look at the points losses and they will take it on board and they will say, right, is it worth spending 20, 30 million on a player for the sake of 2 points deductions? If they get me a winning goal in the 90th minute and it gets me 3 points, then I'm a point in the positive, you know? So I think that as much as Forest and Everton can feel aggrieved, and I feel for the fans, by the way, just to be very clear on that.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of a club that's been held accountable for what has happened by the club. It's not the fans' fault. So I want to make that really, really clear. However, I think that at a club level, I think that the sanctions that are being dished out, quite frankly, aren't enough. And therefore, like I say, people will continue to do it.
Well, they will, because they're probably going to change the rules again now. Now that pretty much all the clubs have realised that PSR stops them buying who they want, they'll change it and have a luxury tax, and there won't be point deductions soon, I imagine. So, which tells you all you need to know. Rules are just basically what the clubs want them to be and what the most powerful teams, and City are one of them. So, you know, again, we're just fans, aren't we? We're just sat here shaking our head because City might be relegated or have the biggest points deduction ever later this year. And as a fan, I used to just talk about football. That's the most disappointing. I used to just talk about football and I'd be in a mood when we lost, and we lost a lot in the old days, so we went up and down. But it was just about football, and now we don't even seem to talk about football that much. And
I think for me, I find it difficult. I find it difficult when some of the more mainstream the mainstream media, so people like Alex Crooks on Talksport, and he speaks about the fact that if an owner buys a club, he should be able to spend whatever he wants to. I think he was using Newcastle as an example of that recently, and he was saying that they're being hamstrung by financial fair play, and it's like, well, I get that, but again, being very biased. I am biased, Howard, let's be honest. we're all very tribal. We are all biased.
I'm as neutral as it comes.
But it's one of those ones where you kind of like, I get that, but it's really is luck of the draw, isn't it? If your owner happens to be really, really rich and you get to spend a lot of money, and it makes it really difficult for clubs like Luton, where we've not bought our way through the leagues, you know, like we let's face it, we all invest, and Luton, especially when we're in the lower leagues, we were able to attract some better players in the non-league, in League Two, perhaps that were playing at a level below what their actual abilities were, but we haven't bought our way throughout the whole league pyramid to then get there and kind of go, oh well, Newcastle have inherited a new rich owner, so they get to spend exorbitant amounts of money and there be no sanction for it, when those are the rules that are in place to try and level the playing field. Because ultimately, 10 years down the line, it'll just be whichever sheikh or whichever billionaire owner from whatever country it is has more money.
I've had this debate on this podcast. Investment generally, I think most who do, the 93-20 and others will say, no, why is football not allowed investment? And I get that. I don't really have the answers, but I do think it then becomes a race for the most, the richest owners. If you just have an open, has to be something. But the problem is most of the rules are made by the biggest teams to protect their own interests, and there's never a level playing field, and I don't really have the answers. I don't think PSR is it. There's got to be a line in it, some investment and out, but not totally unfiltered, because we'll never have that level playing field, and we never have done in the past, but it'd be nice if you had some levelling somewhere. Anyway,
I agree.
It's a Saturday, a rare 3 p.m. kickoff for City. Do you have any expectations of getting a result? I mean, City are going to rotate a lot. I would not expect John Stones, who was rubbing his hamstring in at the end, Rodri or Phil Foden for starters to play. But, of course, we still have plenty of options. So do you have any expectation? Or I might as well jump lighthead now and say you've got five winnable games after City, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. The reality of it is that City away is a complete free hit. I think that it's a situation where it could be very similar to how our away day at Arsenal was the other day. I think that bear in mind your sort of backlog of fixtures as well as the need to sort of rotate will perhaps mean that if you go ahead, it might just be a game of keep ball. I think that it might be a case of City getting ahead like Arsenal did and shutting up shop, rotating the squad and using some other players. And I think it sounds mad and it sounds incredibly negative, but I think it's one of those situations where as long as our goal difference doesn't take an absolute pounding, I think that the majority of realistic Luton fans will kind of go, you're looking at a Man City team that are quite literally the champions of Europe. They're the current champions of England and they have been for year after year after year recently. And they're absolutely on it at the moment, the typical sort of City onslaught from sort of January, February onwards towards the league, and we're running into them at home. You know, so yeah. I think that it's one of those situations where realistically we're not expecting anything. This will be one of those ones that was circled in the diary as a 0 points and keep the goal difference as far down as we possibly can. Then when you chuck into that our own personal situation, and like I said, the fact that we are still down a number of different players, it will be a case of us trying to make it as painless as possible. So I wouldn't say that I don't want to take it, but you know, if we can keep it sort of between two and four goals, even I'd be feeling like we've done not too badly. And then we, like you say, we turn our attentions to the real sort of crux of the season, really. And like I say, we've got fixtures where the last five games I can see is getting returns from each of those. We do have some returning players, which I've been told are looking more likely to be from the Brentford game onwards. So hopefully that'll rejuvenate us and give us a few more options, a few more legs. And ultimately, I think that if we could get, in my head, if we can get between 8 and 10 points from those last five games,
yeah,
I feel like we'll be in a good position to hopefully catch someone. I think that, like I say, two wins and a draw from the remaining home games and a point on the road at either Wolves or West Ham could be enough.
Just to mention those five, it's Brentford, Wolves, Everton, West Ham, Fulham.
Yeah,
it's not a bad run in that, is it?
It's not bad. You'd take that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Well, we've got Fulham, I think. No, I think we've played the others. I don't know, actually. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'd be a terrible record against Brentford, so I'm not sure we'd take Brentford, but thankfully we've done better this season, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just wondering, looking at that, how will Edward set up? Will he make changes, or can you not afford to because you've got so many players absent?
I think that's it. I think sounds like a weird terminology, a weird turn of phrase, but we're so hamstrung by just how small the squad is at the minute. I mean, we had an open training day on Monday up at Kenilworth Road, and our first team sort of group that were able to train had seven players in it. There was a few that are obviously sort of being rested and sort of nursing a few knocks. There was a couple that were doing their badges with the youngsters, but the reality of it is when you saw the actual first team training, there were seven of them. So we're sort of in a position where luxury wise it would be lovely to sort of say, right, okay, we'll rest a few players, knowing just how important those other five games are. But the reality of it is that we haven't got those options to do it without putting in members of the development team. I feel like it might be almost used as a sort of training exercise to keep our legs going, if that makes any sense at all. So, I think that Edwards just knows that we're resource wise, we're very, very heavily hampered at the minute, and we've just got to make best of what is a really challenging situation.
Well, I'm sorry to ask this, but I always do. Go ahead of your heart, score prediction for this game.
I said between 2 and 4, didn't I? Let's go for 3. I'll go 3-1. I hope that those travelling fans that are, that have supported Luton up and down the country this year get the chance to celebrate a goal at the Etihad. That'd be great.
We like to concede a goal. I know this sounds like first world problems, but I get very panicky when we make multiple changes for a game. Tend to do it in cup games and the rhythm goes completely. So, and without Rodri, we're half the team, but obviously, yeah.
Well, last time you did that in the FA Cup against us, you didn't do too bad.
No, because Rodri wasn't in the, yeah. But, I mean, that was just a FA Cup. It was just a crazy FA Cup game. I don't know if you could take much from that, to be honest. I mean, it was absolute basketball football. I mean, as a neutral, yeah, I would have really enjoyed that because you could have been 2 up early doors, couldn't you? And then, yeah. It was great.
I mean,
I don't think it'll mimic that game, to be honest, whoever's picked for either side. So.
No. I mean, we're good at scoring. The only team that has stopped us from scoring in the last 20-odd games has been Arsenal away. So like I say, we'll give it a good crack. And like I say, hopefully, even if we get a goal and go ahead for a little while, it'd be nice to have some positive memories. Because the last time we were at the Etihad was we lost in the penalty shootout of the conference playoff final. So that was the last time I was at the Etihad. We lost on penalties against AFC Wimbledon in the playoff final.
You've come a long way.
Yeah, we've come a long, long way. So, like I say, losing the conference final to playing against you legitimately off of our own backs and off of our own steam is quite some journey. So, yeah, we're looking forward to coming up there.
Look, as always, my apologies to the opposition fan. As I tell them off air beforehand, it'll be maximum 20 minutes. And as always, it always goes way past 20. And I could talk for 2 hours, to be honest. But yeah, I know you've got things to do. But one very, very quick question. New stadium still on the way?
Yes. Yeah. My understanding is that there's sort of boots on the ground. There's work that started. It's literally called Power Court, and there's a substation that needs to be moved.
Different site, so obviously a different site because they're not building around. But how
That's
far
right.
away?
So it's still in the town centre. It's probably about a mile away, if that. And like I say, it's at a place called Power Court, but there's a substation that needs moving before any sort of serious work can go on. Yeah. So the reality of it is that Luton fans have been waiting for a new ground for years and years and years. And the current...
So no opposition now?
No. It should be hot to trot, really. I think that COVID took a... meant that the plans were very different because a lot of it was based on us having like a retail park and to sort of fund things and rejuvenate that area. So things have had to change because of the way the world's just changed. There's a lot more online shopping than people going into retail parks, etc. But underlying thing is that it's cracking on. And like I say, I just hope that we get in there in the next couple of years, fingers crossed.
Brilliant. Good luck. And they know we're being patronised by away fans talking about that entrance through houses and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you won't miss that. Yeah.
Do you know what? I love Kenilworth Road. Like, obviously, it's one of those ones. Yeah. I love it. But the biggest difficulty, actually, for me is walking past the tourists that come in every week and go, oh, look, someone's back at someone's house. Oh, especially when you've been to places like Spurs recently, where they've got this multi-billion pound complex, you could call
bespoke
it.
And cheese then... counters in the concourse.
And then you see them taking photos of the Oak Road end and sponsored by Domino's, and you kind of think, yeah, we're worlds apart, but it's my world and I love it, and it's home from home. So it'll be a sad day when we have to leave.
Well, Phil, as always, after this weekend, all the best with the rest of the season. I'd much rather watch Luton than Sean Dyche football next season.
100%,
in the Premier League.
100%.
Been a credit. Honestly, it's been wonderful to watch. So, and thank you for taking the time out to speak.
No problem, really at all. Pleasure.
So take care. And now we will go back to the panel to preview the weekend game. Okay, thank you very much, Phil. Right, what a season it has been for them, and still may be. Lloyd, you obviously get the easiest question of the day. It's time to preview the Luton game this weekend. Must-win game, yes. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
That's a resounding yes then, obviously. It must be, yeah.
We have to beat Luton, I'm sorry. No one can convince me that anything less than 3 points is what's required.
Okay, well, let's get to the crux of this. George Lloyd, George, I'll start with you. The only question, really, is how much rotation is safe? How much is needed? Do you have a team in mind? And are there players that you want to see nowhere near the pitch?
Wow, that's those are the questions, aren't they?
You could pick just one if you want.
I think if I see anybody predict the lineup without having any kind of informed leaks, then fair play to them. They should also go and pick out some lottery numbers for the Euro Millions tonight as well. But in terms of how much is safe, I think you can change five or six players from midweek and still be safe. If you think about who didn't play at Real, who did play against Palace, you know, Rico and Oscar Bob, for example, I think those two definitely have to be in the side, and I think they've earned that place as well. It's not just the case of rotating to give other people a rest. I think they can really have an impact in these games. The interesting one will be the keeper situation, because that will also lend itself to the home leg against Madrid. Guardiola said in his press conference just earlier that Edison's fit and is ready to play, but he didn't confirm that he would be playing, which is, you know, fairly interesting, as he, you know, was the kind of undisputed number one.
He did say he's my number one when he was asked.
Yeah, he did say the number one, but he didn't say he would be playing. Do you know what I mean? So there's still the chance Ortega does, but I think Edison, I think he does come back into the side. And so then you've got another change.
I'm not sure if he did, it would tell us much about Wednesday, to be honest.
No. And then, yeah, outside of that, I'm finding it really hard. At the midfield, Rodri's kind of begged for a rest.
George, I'll interrupt you then. Let's name the players you yourself personally do not want to see start this game. Do you have a number of players, or you're not that bothered and you think anyone could play?
I don't want to see John Stones playing.
Yep.
I don't want to see Rodri starting.
Correct.
I don't want to see Phil Foden starting.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised about Bernardo as well, but then there'd be a full new look midfield. He never drops Bernardo. And outside of that, yeah, maybe Akanji as well. Because if he gets an injury, then that's a big problem for us. I think he can plug all the holes in the defensive line. So maybe he gets a rest as well. But yeah, those are the main ones for me. It's John Stones. After when he pulled up with that injury on Tuesday, I was very worried, and he seemed to almost play through it. I've seen an interaction at the sidelines with the physios where he said he's felt something, but he's playing on. So yeah, he needs a rest. But what about you? Those three as well.
I think Stones is actually number one now above Rodri because of him feeling there's zero chance he can play this game, as far as I'm concerned. And yeah, I mean, we went to Luton in the Cup, and I spoke to Phil about that crazy game Rodri didn't play in, but it was just a crazy FA Cup game away from home. Yeah. I don't think you can make conclusions from it. But Luton themselves have got so many players out that we can't complain. But Lloyd, the issue for me is not quality of who comes in. I get very panicky. It's totally out of character for me when we make multiple changes to a side, because it's about rhythm. Normally we do it for Carabao Cup games, I'll get over it if it don't work, but I don't know, just a little bit of me thinks you can rotate too much. Three or four I'd be fine with, and if it's going well, obviously use your substitutions in the second half if it's going well. But beyond that, I do get a bit panicky. Is it just me?
No, I think you're right, but I'm sorry, I think we've got to take a risk this weekend. I think the way...
I kind of agree with that as well, so yeah.
The way the fixtures are laid out for us, So we cover this on the review. I think it's basically the only game Rodri can sit out, apart from maybe this FA Cup semi before the end of the season, if, you know, if things go well. So I think he has to be on the bench at the weekend. I think you've probably got to change five or six from the Madrid team. And I'll tell you what team I think it should be. So I think the only guys that will probably keep their place, or for me should keep their place, are Akanji, Diaz and Gvardiol.
Mm-hmm.
Kovacic.
Yeah.
And then Haaland up front. I think other than that, I think everybody else probably should change. So Grealish has now played three in a row after not having played very much prior to that. I think he'll have to drop out. I think Bernardo will need to come out. And then obviously the three that you discussed are the most important three. And then I do think Pep will play Edison, because I think he'll want the opportunity to pick either goalkeeper probably in the home leg. Yeah. And he'll want to have a look at Edison before throwing him into, you know, such a big game like Madrid without any minutes. So yeah, I think that'll be the team. So then if you're filling in the blanks, basically, I think it'll be, or for me, it should be Edison in that back four of Lewis, Akanji, Diaz and Gvardiol, Kovacic and De Bruyne with Alvarez in midfield, and then probably Doku, Haaland and Oscar Bob on the right wing.
No Nunes, Kovacic, Luton double like last time?
I think that's probably what they'd have planned, but given De Bruyne didn't play because of the food poisoning, he'll obviously be, I think, okay to play, and probably okay to play both games, given he didn't play midweek.
Or at least an hour, yeah.
So what's the point? I mean, I'm sorry, De Bruyne is a better footballer than Mateus Nunes. Sorry to all those offended out there, but I would be playing De Bruyne.
I think Steve's gone big on Doku starting for an article, so he's sweating now. But he seems an obvious pick, doesn't he? He's fit and not been playing recently.
Well, and up against Luton, you know, a low block at home, they're the games that we signed Jeremy Doku for. They're the ones that we really need his skill set.
Indeed. George, are you totally comfortable going into this game, confidence-wise?
Totally comfortable is maybe a little more optimistic than I'm feeling. I'd say slightly comfortable. I'd be a bit more on the back foot. At this stage of the season, you know, every game's fraught with tension and there is a nervousness that, because, you know, a draw is a loss essentially now, isn't it, at this stage of the season? So, you know, you've got to win every single game. But, you know, you'd like to think that we can do the job with a rotated side against a team in the bottom three. As good as Luton have been
with 10 players out. Yeah,
so many injuries, and they had a small squad anyway, and, you know, they haven't had the investment of other teams, and they've been really great to watch this year. All their games have been good, but I would just like to think that we can do the job, and I'd be stunned if we didn't win. And it's possible, obviously, anything could happen in the Premier League, but I would be very stunned. What about you?
I'd be very, very stunned, yeah. To put it bluntly, yeah. Even if the game don't go well, join the game, we'll have those options, won't we, for the non-starters. I don't think it would kill them if we have to utilise some for 20, 30 minutes, and we might do whatever the score, just to not overwork any of the squad. We have so many players that we can bring in. As I say, my only concern is too many changes can disrupt rhythm. George, also, Kabore can't play for them because he's a City player as well. So,
of course,
on top of all their injuries, one of their regulars won't be available for this match. So, and they just don't have a full defence to pick from, and haven't had for a long time, and didn't invest in the window either. So, we can't really complain about these first world problems that we might have to rotate when the opposition, who have come up from the Championship on modest resources, have had an absolutely disastrous season with injuries like many other clubs. So
yeah,
I say the only concern for me is too many changes can disrupt rhythm. But
yeah,
we're going to dominate the ball, and if we go out them, yeah, it should be fine. Should be fine unless we do a Palace and sit on a 2-goal lead and let teams back in. But
I can't see that happening. I think, with, like you say, all those injuries and the absences in the defensive line, I think that's why it's important Haaland does start, at least just give him the opportunity to get some more goals, get that confidence to then take into Wednesday's fixture. Ideally, I'd like to play Haaland, get a few goals, bring him off after, 45 minutes or an hour, and really boost him up, get him ready to go for that second leg against Madrid.
Just quickly, Jules, because I think we already chatted with Lloyd about this on the review. I think we're two behind Liverpool on the goal difference. We ain't catching Arsenal on goal difference. If the game's going well, would you be disappointed if City game managed this with the Madrid game coming up? Or do you think if it's going well, it's an opportunity to get some, that goal difference boosted?
It definitely would be an opportunity that I'd like to see them take, but I can't see that them taking it just the way that we've played this season. I think if we've got a 2-goal cushion, Pep will just manage the game out, want it, the ball just passed around, no end-to-end stuff. He'll just want to save legs. He's gone from kind of always wanting to put the sword to people, and we've scored fives and sixes against a lot of these teams in previous years. This season we've been more than happy with a 1 or 2 goal lead, so I'd be very surprised if they go gung-ho. But I think it'd be wise to just make sure that the goal difference in relation to Liverpool's is seen to, because it definitely could come down to that on the final day.
Lloyd, I think Pep, I've just reading up on Twitter before we started recording, Pep kept his cards close to his chest on the injuries. Did he mention Walker at all?
No, not really, but there's obviously Jack Gorn's done a story about Walker, and I know Jack's got good connections to Walker's camp. It sounds like he's targeting that Madrid game to try and make a comeback. So maybe he's on the bench. Maybe he comes on, but I think probably not. I think Walker, the kind of athlete that he is, we've seen in the past, sometimes he'll come straight back into the starting lineup after being out. So I wouldn't completely rule that out for Madrid, but yeah, maybe on the bench.
Okay. Score prediction then, Lloyd?
It's really hard to predict this because we basically don't know what team City are going to pick. So it's very difficult, I think, to see how it'll play out. On the basis that I think there'll be at least 4 to 5 rotated players, I think there's probably a chance that we find it a bit difficult initially, but maybe we get the job done towards the kind of latter end of the game. So we've not been great at keeping clean sheets at the moment, so I think I'll go 3-1 to City.
I think I did. I can't remember what I said with Phil, but maybe I think it was that because of the clean sheet thing. George, your prediction?
I'm going to back the defence to get one of few clean sheets this year. I think I'll go for 3-0 and a Haaland brace.
We could do with that.
Settle for that. And let's not forget, the out-of-form Haaland does remain the Premier League's top scorer this season. And not for one moment did I ever think he's going to replicate 50 goals anyway, let's be honest. So that would just be ridiculous. So, but hey, right, we've discussed Liverpool. Final question of the pod. Both get to answer briefly. Lloyd, any chance Arsenal drop points at home to Villa?
Yeah, I think that there is a chance, definitely. Villa have, they've been a hard, tough nut to crack this season. Yeah, we dealt with them pretty well, but they won again midweek. Watkins is back. McGinn's not going to be suspended. I think there's a decent chance, yeah. Mainly because I think from Arsenal's side, they just aren't used to dealing with this double kind of 2 games a week, massive pressure. And it's, you know, it's not just, I heard John Stones talk about it last season. He said it's not really physically, it's just more mentally kind of switching from one to another. And if you kind of get punched in the face by a Premier League team after having played like a, you know, a game midweek, it can be really hard to kind of get yourself back into gear and get over the line. So yeah, I do think there's a chance that Villa take at least a point from Arsenal. I'd probably put it at around, like, I don't know, 30-40%. Liverpool, though, I think,
yeah,
I think Liverpool will win. You know, they're going to have to respond to what was apparently a shite performance, and you know, they're gonna have to go to Italy and try and turn that around. I don't buy Carragher's thing that they're going to go and play a second string team. I think the fans would be really, really on Klopp's back if he did that. So I think Liverpool will win, but I really wouldn't be surprised if Villa got something. I still think Arsenal will win, but you know, this is probably one of the opportunities where they could drop points in the running, definitely.
Yeah, maybe. I think Pep mentioned when talking about Rodri in the press conference, it was just before we came on air, exhaustion with him is mental as well as physical. So I imagine it's very much physical as well, considering how we flog him to death. George, the schedule will hit Villa more, but there is, I understand, you know, Villa being superb, but I don't know, I keep having my doubts that they're about to drop off a cliff or not quite the heights they were previously in the season. But do you share Lloyd's optimism that Villa have got a chance of taking something on Sunday?
Yeah, I think of all the games Arsenal's got left, this is one of the trickier fixtures, and it's also quite nice that we play first out of the three teams playing the Saturday. And I think just that little psychological thing, if we can do the business against Luton, then you know we'll
top.
Sunday we'll be top of the league, and for those other teams it will it'll mean, you know, that it just adds that little element where they've like, okay, they can see it, you know, with the visually on the table, we've got to win, and a bit more desperate, a bit more slightly anxious when things aren't going right. So I think there definitely could be a chance of a draw at the Emirates between Villa and Arsenal. Arsenal will probably do the business, but I think there is a shot. Whereas at Anfield, you know, Liverpool versus Palace, I really do expect Liverpool to have a big response to their loss on Thursday. If it was at Selhurst Park, maybe it would be slightly different. You know, we could have shades of Chris Dan Bull again. But yeah, I just can't see it, especially with the way Palace have been recently, just a bit disjointed, still trying to work out their identity under the new coach. So yeah, I'm not expecting anything, but I'm probably keep my eye on that one at the Emirates the most on Sunday. Oh.
Okay, right. Time has defeated us, George. Thank you very much for taking the time out.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Lloyd, thank you very much.
Last thing, actually, Howard, I've just seen Rob Edwards has finished his press conference with Luton, and he said that none of the players that he thought could be back from Bournemouth are back, and there's fresh doubts over Mengi and Burke, two of their starting defenders. Obviously, Kabore is ineligible, so he said we're really struggling for fit defenders for the weekend.
Bloody hell. You do feel for them. It's been, I mean, we discussed with Phil, Lloyd just said he can't rotate because there's no one to rotate. So, it's at the point of just like, put your hands up if you're fit, and that's where he's at.
Take your boots to the Etihad, Howard.
Well, they've got five winnable games. Yeah, they've got, I think Brentford is next week. They've got West Ham, Fulham, Everton they've got. Ideally, Edwards would want, like, you know, rest Barkley and players like that. But you can't if there's no one to bring in. He's not going to be putting youth players in. So he'll have to pick the team, you know, senior players he's got available. So, crazy situation. Yeah, obviously City should see this one out comfortably. Lloyd, thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry, I cut you off there, Howard. Yeah, cheers.
No, that was important stuff, so thank you. And have a good weekend. Right, that is a wrap. We're all off to enjoy the solitary day of the year without rain. Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay safe. And as always, up the Blues.